Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast, your weekly dose of talking about watching soccer on TV, online and apps. Coming up on episode 50, we discuss which foreign clubs are the ones that market themselves the best in the US, as well as news about the latest version of the famed Football Manager computer game, plus our thoughts about Carl Martino stepping down from NBC to run in the USSF presidency election. Plus, we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, and I'm joined today by Kartik Krishnaiyer. Kartik, this is our 50th episode. Who would have thought?
Yeah, I think when we changed the format of the show, we were concerned there wouldn't be enough to talk about from the media and television sphere and streaming sphere every week. And it turns out the podcasts are longer than the old European football review shows we used to do, and Premier League review shows. So a lot to talk about, a lot going on in the soccer world, and it's been exciting for the last 12 months or so with these 50 episodes.
Absolutely. And it also celebrates 12 years of World Soccer Talk, the website, and 11 years of this podcast. Now, this podcast has gone through very many different different forms over the years, as far as an interview show, an analysis show, kind of a chat show, focusing on the Premier League, and then more on world football, and now into its current format. But in those 11 years, it's been nonstop going, and actually, I believe it's the longest-running soccer podcast on the planet. So it's definitely... Thank you, listeners, for sticking with us and checking out the show. So in terms of the show for this episode, we've got a lot to talk about, but let's start off, Kartik, by talking about what you've been watching this past week.
Yeah, so I'll start on Friday. Well, actually, I guess on Thursday of last week, after we recorded, watched some Europa League action, Lyon and Everton. And it was Keith Costigan and Brad Friedel, if I remember correctly, and Everton again was dire, pitiful, pathetic, whatever adjective you want to use to describe them. They're bottom of their group in Europa League. They have been eliminated from the competition. So there was so much excitement about Everton getting back into Europe this year. They are out of Europe after four match days. So that's unfortunate. And of course, they actually kind of struggled even to get to the group stage. These signs were apparent before the Premier League season had started. So saw that. On Friday, there were two very good games that were on. The Frankfurt-Werder Bremen game, which was on FS2, with Jim Beglin and Paul Dempsey. Paul Dempsey, actually, the play-by-play announcer, talked about the history of this podcast over 12 years. Paul Dempsey come on to give some analysis of the Premier League for us in his days at Satanta many times. I think he's been on this show or the predecessor of the show four or five times. And I personally interviewed him three or four of those times. So, old familiar face for us here at World Soccer Talk. And Jim Beglin, as always, was fantastic in commentary. Simultaneously was watching Wolves in Frankfurt, big game. And by the way, I should mention the last two Fridays, we've had Paul Dempsey as the commentator for Bundesliga games that have been aired on FS1 because of Eric Winalda being on a leave of absence from Fox. And I think that's limited their Friday options. So we're getting the global feed, which brings some familiar voices back into our homes, people who've called Premier League and Bundesliga matches for years. Wolves-Fulham game, which was on ESPN3. I can't say enough about how impressed I am by the way Wolves are playing. I think they're a team. If they keep this up, not only are they going to get promoted, but we're going to be talking about them next season in the Premier League as maybe even a mid-table team, a team that doesn't have the relegation worry that normally newly promoted teams have. The next morning, I watched Aston Villa and Sheffield Wednesday on ESPN3. I have to say, Chris, when I remember about championship games on ESPN3, which tends to be when there are no good Premier League games, it's so much more of an accessible league at this point than it was a year ago, with BN showing one game a week or showing a game on tape delay.
Yep.
I think BN made an effort. I thought they made a greater effort as time went on to air as many championship games as they could, but they just had so many other programming commitments. And obviously that's not an issue with ESPN3. So
yeah, the only challenge with the championship, which is great that it's on ESPN3 and there's more games from the championship available than ever before. But the challenge is that for those people who can't watch it live, they just have to rely on going to ESPN3 and then hoping that the match is available on replay there, which I believe some of them are, but not all of them. It's a little bit inconsistent, but it's definitely one of those things that for soccer fans who are listening, also this weekend too, I think there's a bunch of League 1 and League 2 games that are going to be on ESPN3 during the international break. So it's a good opportunity to watch some competitive football.
Yeah, so on that subject specifically, on finding championship and football league matches on ESPN3 on demand, this past weekend, the weekend we're talking about, and then this upcoming weekend, be patient with it. There are a lot of college soccer, American college soccer tournament matches from women's and men's soccer that are being dumped on ESPN3. So when you go into the archive, you have to just meticulously look for the championship games or this upcoming week for the League 1 and 2 games. Right. They're there. They're on demand. I've seen four matches. Was actually just scrolling through before the podcast because I said I wanted to throw on a match, and I'm watching the aforementioned Wednesday Villa match. I'm watching again as we record this podcast, and the opening goal from Reach just now on the volley. But you have to scroll through. I have to scroll through about 10 or 12 college soccer games to get to find this game again. So be patient with that.
That's good to know.
There were some. Yeah, that's why I think it's difficult to find. They have a lot of they typically don't have a lot of soccer content right on the archive, but these few weeks they will. So obviously watch that game, as I mentioned, Aston Villa and Sheffield Wednesday. Then the match of the weekend that we were largely excited about was Borussia Dortmund playing host to Bayern. And Borussia Dortmund were very poor other than Christian Pulisic and got beat 3-1. They didn't take their chances when they had them. And this is Dortmund went several seasons without losing a game at home and now have lost successive matches at home. Granted, they're to Leipzig and Bayern, the other top two teams in the league, and they went away and lost to Hannover, who's having a very good season. But real warning signs and very disappointing performance for me from Dortmund. But the American Christian Pulisic was very, very good. That was the one bright spot for Dortmund. And Peter Bosch, the Dortmund coach, said that he was the best player for them in this match.
Yeah, Kartik, that's the frustrating thing about these Dortmund-Bayern Munich games is that it's the biggest match of the season, always is, and it's always disappointing. It seems to be that for whatever reason, which is oftentimes Bayern Munich just running the show, I just want to see a more competitive game. I mean, in the studio, you had everything set to be a perfect broadcast. You had Keith Costigan and Ian Joy doing an excellent job on the commentary. You had Kate Abdo, Jovan Karoski, and Ian Joy in the studio. Everything was set perfectly, except the match just was really disappointing, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think there are varying ways that people interpret this. I think people a number of people like the fact that the Bundesliga doesn't have a predictable top four or top six every year. You have teams like Hannover this season thus far, Hoffenheim last season, Mönchengladbach year before. Clubs like that popping into the top four somewhat unexpectedly. Mönchengladbach did it two successive years. But the flip side of it is the predictability at the very top, where Dortmund and now Leipzig have not run Bayern as close as I think a lot of outsiders, a lot of neutrals like to see. So, and since Jan Pikens has gotten to Bayern, they've gotten 12 points. They've won 12 points at the same in the same period, which is since the October international break. Four matches, four match days. Borussia Dortmund has won. So what was a 5-point Dortmund lead now is a 6-point Bayern lead, and goal difference has reversed in that period. So that's, I think, of great concern to people who want to see a competitive league.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a fan of Bayern Munich, you're happy as anything. But for the neutrals, it's just disappointing. It does tarnish my interest in the Bundesliga a little bit, but life goes on. I still enjoy watching the Bundesliga, but I think that's a key element that they need to fix in the future at some point.
Yeah, so continuing, I watched the Brentford-Leeds game, which took place at this time, same time later on demand on ESPN3, and Brentford were very good in the game. Another difficult loss for Leeds. They're sliding down the table pretty quickly, so won't be surprised if there's a management change there and Christensen is out. Speaking of management changes, Liverpool-West Ham going on at the same time. That proved to be Slaven Bilic's last match. Very, very uninspired performance from West Ham. It was disappointing. I think the Mikel Antonio mistake at the end of the game against Palace the previous week, that hangover got to them this week. They get run off the pitch. Mo Salah, once again, brilliant going forward for Liverpool. Questions about Liverpool's defense, but good match there. Next morning, City-Arsenal on NBC. With the build-up and everything going on at halftime and after the match, we didn't realize it would be Colin Martino's last day on NBC, at least for a while, if not forever, depending on what happens in the USSF presidential election. Following that, they had the three-man booth again for Manchester United and Chelsea. This match was a little more entertaining than maybe it's been given credit for, in my estimation. The thing, though, Chris, is I think, you know, this is a theme you and I have been on for years and years and years, but there was a charm offensive and an unwillingness for many of the journalists in the UK to take a pop at Mourinho for his tactics. Now, that's not the case anymore. With the exception of the few handpicked journalists that are still close to Jose, I think it's open season anytime a Jose Mourinho-managed team, and these days Manchester United, goes away from home to another big side. And I felt like United was a little more aggressive and a little more open than they have been in the Mourinho era away from home in these sorts of matches. That's not to say they set up to try and win the game. They didn't, but they did attempt to keep the ball and dictate tempo a little more than they typically do in these matches. But they reverted to form eventually, and Chelsea got the goal and were able to shut it down because United had didn't have the effective options that they needed. Right, with Paul Pogba out of the team in midfield, Bakayoko was brilliant in this game. We saw. Finally, I think the skill level we had seen from him, particularly in Europe, the last few seasons for Monaco. So that was great. Watched Louisville City, Red Bull, New York 2 game. That was the previous night. I should have mentioned that. That was a USL playoff game that went to the penalty kicks, and Louisville advanced. So Louisville will host who beat OKC Energy in the USL Cup this weekend, or actually not this weekend, on Monday night. And that game, I believe, is on ESPNU. That will be at Slugger Field in Louisville. And Monday night is in order to get it a free time slot on that ESPN network. And then, of course, next day, getting back to Sunday, a lot of MLS playoff action, Toronto, New York Red Bulls, NYCFC in Columbus. The Toronto Red Bull game was John Champion calling that match. Odd to see him calling an MLS match the same weekend that there's so many Premier League and Championship games going on. Yep. And we normally hear his voice 2 or 3 times on the weekend. But ESPN flew him over to call this game, and he's been in studio much of the week on ESPN FC. Made an appearance this week on the Max and Herc podcast, which I encourage anyone who's interested to listen to this week or to watch. Very, very good stuff as usual from John Champion. And as I said, he's been in the ESPN FC studio having to deal with the likes of Craig Burley, which is with someone we know he's worked with for so many years, going back to Santa days. So they have a good camaraderie and good chemistry. Portland-Houston, that game was not on ESPN. That game was on FS1. I have one takeaway from that match. I have a lot of takeaways from the match in terms of analysis and Albert Ellis in Houston and how well they played, how well their Honduran players played, which is great for Honduras going into this intercontinental playoff with Australia. But my big takeaway from the game was Alexi Lawless' facial expression when Rob Stone mentioned that Darlington Nagbe was potentially going to get called into the U.S. men's national team for the friendly against Portugal. Now, Nagbe didn't get called in. I think many of us are relieved by that, including Lawless. But Lawless's facial expression was priceless. And it was one of those things where, again, I think he scripted not to say anything because Nagbe – in fact, minutes later, there was an MLS commercial that featured Nagbe as the featured player. There's been an agenda where guys like Darlington Nagbe, who are MLS lifers, guys like Jorge Villafania, who won the Sueño MLS contest to get into to even get into the national team, guys like Paul Arriola, who were couched as big signings this year in MLS, were not to be criticized in the wake of the U.S. defeat in Trinidad. But all the attention and booing and media critique was directed toward really two players, Jose Altidore and Michael Bradley. And I can't help now think, I thought part of it was a lazy, easy narrative. But now there are people pointing out to me, it's probably because they play, even though they're in MLS, they play for a Canadian club and not an American club. And that, I've thought that so many of these arguments and reactions are xenophobic to begin with. Mm-hmm. But that takes it to a whole new level because those two guys are playing in Canada, and that was something I never thought about. But that's been pointed out. I would urge Lawless and the other commentators to treat these other U.S. players the same way they've treated Bradley and Altidore.
Right.
We've seen this before, though, too, Kartik, with like Wayne Rooney, I think, coming back from a disappointing World Cup and having even David Beckham, I think, when he got sent off against Argentina. There's been times where for maybe a couple of weeks you have fans booing them. But, it's not good to see in terms of that. But interesting viewpoints in terms of maybe the Canadian side of things, whether that was played into it or not. I didn't see the match, so I can't say.
Yeah, the Rooney thing, I sounded off on that on this show or on the predecessor show 7 years ago. It was the 2010 World Cup when England came back and came back really having been – I mean, they finished behind the U.S. in a group. That's how bad they were. Wayne Rooney just got so much abuse hurled at him ground after ground. That's absolutely right. And that abuse was not given to other England players. So maybe it is always the stars or the big names that are singled out. But for me, guys like Nagbe had a lot more to do with the U.S. not being in the World Cup than Michael Bradley. That's my personal opinion. I can't stress, Chris, just closing out this discussion of what I watched, how good the quality of play has been in the MLS postseason and how much I've enjoyed it. But that contrast to the regular season, I cannot stress enough as well how poor this regular season was, how uninteresting it was for me for the most part, and how there were very few compelling storylines or reasons to watch matches when they were on. And oftentimes, I would force myself to watch MLS matches because I feel like it's an obligation and I have to do it. Maybe you've done the same thing during the regular season. So this is, I think, a reminder to everybody out there that Major League Soccer has a lot of quality in it. It has a lot of quality players. I mentioned for Houston, several of those guys are going to play prominent roles this weekend in the Intercontinental Playoff for Honduras as they try and defeat Australia to reach their third successive World Cup. But you don't see this passion. You don't see this intensity. You don't see this level of play in the regular season. And it's a byproduct of the regular season not meaning much. And quite honestly, and I hate to keep bringing up this issue because I've been on it lately, and part of it's been because it's been talked about in the USSF race, when MLS plays, which is in the hottest months of the season, it doesn't lend itself to entertaining football at all or open football. So
it's the same thing every
year. The playoffs have been very good, but I think it just reinforces to me how bad MLS's structure is.
Right, exactly. It's the same thing that happens every season. It's like there's some exciting games.
You're probably right.
And a lot of people miss out on them because there's other – I mean, there's NFL games or there's World Series or there's other sports going on at the same time. So it's same old, same old. I mean hopefully there's some changes in the future. But I know there's been talk, but we've been talking about this for years. Now, in terms of kind of some of the stuff I've been watching, Kartik, for this past week or so, many of the same things that you watched, except for I watched Swansea against Brighton. I watched this one on NBC Sports Gold after I got home from my kids' soccer games on Saturday. And this is without any bias at all, but there's no shadow of a doubt. The Swansea is absolutely the worst team in the Premier League right now. It's absolutely appalling how poor they are, and they're guaranteed to go down unless there's any major changes, whether it's managerial or new transfer signings coming in. But they were absolutely woeful. This is probably the worst Swansea game I've ever seen them play, and this is going back for decades. Absolutely pitiful.
Wow. And
I mean, they couldn't complete free kicks. They couldn't.
Did you see them at White Hart Lane last year?
They were better at White Hart Lane. At least White Hart Lane for the first like maybe 15 minutes.
Because I had remarked
competitive. So Kartik, something else I watched this weekend, which was actually a lot more pleasurable than watching Swansea, was The Extra. So on Saturday, I missed most of the matches. Just again, mostly soccer for my kids. Tuned in to watch The Extra on beIN Sports and was really glad that I did, because there was a segment there by Thomas Rongen and Gary Bailey. They were on set. It was called Coach's Corner, where they dissected how Barcelona's Alcázar played a key role in midfield and attack in that match. And it was really, Rongen and Bailey have such great chemistry together. Not just that, but they also have great tactical awareness in terms of being able to explain positioning or explain tactics and formations and individual players and, you know, how these players rotate, done on television with the TV replays. And it was really, really well done. And I definitely implore any of the listeners that haven't had a chance to watch The Extra, definitely check it out, because it's highly recommended. Plus, on weekends too, they have all of the highlights from all the matches. So I got to see Premier League highlights as well as La Liga, Ligue 1, and some other matches. But all in all, a great job by beIN Sports there. And actually, to me, like, the analysis there is better than Fox, than anything that Fox does in terms of, I mean, Fox doesn't really do tactical analysis other than, you know, kind of those big giant screens for Champions League, and then they kind of move, this player's going to go here, this player's going to go there. Very, very dumbed down. Last but not least, Kartik, I did miss the MLS games on Sunday. Instead, I watched Miami FC against New York Cosmos on beIN Sports. It was the NASL Championship semifinal. You had Andres Cordero and Matteo Bonetti commentating this one. And to me, Kartik, this game was actually very enjoyable to watch. It was a 0-0 game, went to penalty kicks. But in this one, it was, in terms of the playing level, it was almost like watching a Serie A derby. Both managers set the teams up perfectly, were playing good football. Both of them were well-coached, excellent movement on and off the ball, great creativity, and really kind of pleasing on the eye. It was just a kind of a perfectionist soccer match in some ways, just without the goals. So it was missing that excitement level, but overall I enjoyed it. I was pleasantly surprised. Okay, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news, and I'll have you kick it off.
Yeah, Football Manager 2018 will launch on November 10th, which is Friday in the United States. We've got a review up on the World Soccer Talk website. I was able to play the game very, very not to my satisfaction. Football Manager isn't like FIFA where you can play it once and pick up everything, right? You have to spend hours on it. So started a save with Watford and played the Football Manager Cup, the FM Cup against AFC Wimbledon. Those are the two Football Manager sponsored teams, and have all the details you might want over at our website, worldsoccertalk.com.
Yeah, definitely. With Football Manager too, it's one of those games that once you get into it and enjoy it, it's very addictive. And by looking at this one in terms of some of the new features, kind of the social side of things, kind of cliques. Like, so within dressing rooms, there's kind of, yep. I mean, you kind of have your, maybe all the French speakers kind of get together in their own group. And there's a lot of, it's very, very detailed. And the more you get into it, the more immersive it gets. So definitely check that out.
Yeah, I've had to say, I've historically, the last few years, played a lot with Watford because it it's a sponsored team by Football Manager, and there's more detail, I think, to that team playing with them. So you can just imagine Watford with so many different nationalities on their club, how challenging it's going to be with this new feature. So I'm actually looking forward to diving into it.
Yeah, definitely. So check it out, Football Manager 2018 on Friday, November 10th and onwards. We'll be ready for purchase. In other news, Kartik, Carl Martino has taken a hiatus from NBC Sports to run in the USSF presidential election. He will be replaced by the two Robbies. So instead of having the three of them kind of rotate, it's going to be the two Robbies for probably the next few months. If Kyle fails to win, he has said that NBC Sports will hire him back after the election ends, I think in February, I think it is. Meanwhile, Taylor Twellman has tweeted this week that Brad Friedel is the number one candidate for the job at New England Revolution, which was followed by a story, I think, a day or two later by Ives Glossop. And he mentioned that he said the deal has been done, although nothing official from the Revs yet as of the recording of this podcast. But it makes me wonder, Kartik, if the U.S. had qualified for the World Cup, whether Brad Friedel may have decided to stick with Fox Sports rather than take the coaching job. What do you think?
I think that it would have been more of a consideration. I think maybe he's been trying to get into coaching, and as he talked about in an interview I did with him a few months ago, he spent some time with Mauricio Pochettino and the Spurs staff learning the game so he could take his coaching exam. I think he's wanted to coach, but yeah, he might have waited till after the World Cup. You're right.
All right, Kartik. So for the next piece of news, I'm not sure if you saw this or not, but Turner Sports had a short segment this past weekend on their Inside the NBA show, and it was to promote their coverage of the UEFA Champions League. Did you get a chance to watch that or see that?
Yeah, and it was cringeworthy from my perspective.
Okay. Well, let me play it for those listeners who missed it. It's pretty short, but let me go ahead and play that for you so you guys can kind of hear what they had to say about soccer. So here goes.
Crossbar came up.
He never touched it.
I understand it, but
all he had to do was touch the ball and it would have been done.
I don't think all that should have counted. I'm not going to lie.
You can't change the rules because you just don't like the way it goes.
So you must be quite the soccer aficionado if you know the rules that way.
I don't know all the rules. I know that one.
Did you know we're in the soccer business now at Turner?
I do know that.
Yeah, we did a deal with UEFA, the Champions League.
First of all,
and the Europa League.
No, let me tell you something. I want to blow out that deal.
Beginning next summer.
Because any sport that the United States sucks in, we should not be involved in it.
Well, I'm sure the Turner execs are
thrilled
to hear
you say
that.
Well, wait, we don't suck at soccer?
This year. Yeah, we don't suck. We just didn't get into the world.
Over 340 matches
on TV.
That
means we suck, Kenny.
No, that doesn't.
No, it means we suck.
Digital streams and Bleacher Report.
Doesn't mean you suck.
And,
yes,
and
it does.
And we have a special guest.
So, Kartik, we talked about this in last week's episode, too, that with the U.S. not making it into the World Cup, that people are going to say that soccer sucks. Like, why should I bother watching soccer? And here you have Charles Barkley on TNT saying exactly that and looking – he's probably partly joking, but he's looking like a fool. And to me, this is not a good representation of Turner Sports and UEFA Champions League. This isn't I don't think this is going to win over any mainstream fans to get them to watch the Champions League next year. What do you think?
No, I would agree with that. I think it's probably, quite honestly, we get mocked a lot as soccer fans. And I mean, I remember the days when ESPN, they would have SportsCenter lead-ins to Premier League games or MLS games and make fun of the player names and, you know, deliberately mispronounce people's names. Call Thierry Henry Henry, for example. Yep. And it just harkens back to that when you have a network that hasn't covered soccer and has classic American sports personalities making snarky comments, and that's hopefully that's not what we get from Turner Sports. I do appreciate the fact they tried to promote it during an NBA game. Look, the overlap demographic between soccer and the NBA is much greater from at least where I sit, and I've never done an actual formal survey, but informal conversations and surveys with fans across the country than it is with the NFL. Mm-hmm. There's more of a synergy between basketball fans and soccer fans. I think for obvious reasons, I don't want to get into the politics or demographics, but there are reasons for that. So it probably was a smart strategy from Turner to try and plug it during an NBA game more than when NBC plugs the Premier League during of NFL games, and I'm not sure that has much of an impact. But then you get this kind of snarky response, and it just doesn't look good.
Yeah, it's not just snarky, too, but also it looks like they don't know what they're talking about. They're just kind of saying
things. Ignorant.
Right, exactly. So Kartik, for the last piece of news for the news section, I'll let you go ahead and read this one, because this is some exciting news.
Yeah, Amazon and Manchester City announced a groundbreaking new Amazon Prime Video behind-the-scenes multi-part exclusive series following a team that's won the Premier League twice, won top flight title four times in total, Man City, through the entire 2017-2018 series. The Amazon Prime Original Series will offer fans a glimpse into the historic club, its legendary coach Pep Guardiola, and week-on-week stories that unfold within the lives of players and the club, which, of course, is at this point 8 points clear on top of the Premier League table. The series will launch exclusively on Amazon Prime Video in 2018. Prime members will be able to stream the series via Amazon Prime Video app for TVs and also connected devices, including the Fire. If you have a Fire tablet, it'll be built right into your tablet, and you can watch this. TV, mobile devices, and others. You can order online at amazon.co.uk. Members can also download the series to mobile devices, which if you have an Amazon Fire, you'll be able to do for offline viewing at no additional cost to their membership. The series will be a global release and available on Amazon Prime Video for members to watch the series in more than 200 countries and territories. It's real exciting news.
Do you have Amazon Prime, Kartik?
I do have Amazon Prime. I probably use it every day, to be honest with you. Watch something like last night. I just watched an American Experience documentary on Dolly Madison on Amazon Prime. And I have a Fire tablet, too. And I have the Fire tablet, even though I use my iPad tablet for everything I do in terms of computing and work. I use that Fire tablet exclusively to read some of my Kindle books. I have a Kindle as well, but also for that express purpose, which is to download Prime programs and watch them at my convenience. And I will download this entire series, obviously.
Yeah, and for me, even though I'm not a Manchester City supporter, I am an Amazon Prime customer, but this is something I would definitely enjoy watching. It seems like it's a good idea in terms of trying to get people to sign up for Amazon Prime, and here's a great way of doing that. Now, also testing it, too, to see, okay, what is the interest level among soccer fans to a documentary series like this? Could Amazon Prime in the future have some streaming rights and put some of those games or leagues up on there? It's a great test case, and this season, Kartik, is probably better than any in terms of following City, in terms of finding out what's going on behind the scenes with the team doing so well in the Premier League and Champions League. So let's move on to TV ratings. We don't have all the numbers in yet, but we will publish them at worldsoccertalk.com in the next day or two. Some of the big ones that came out of this past week was 782,000 for Chelsea against Man United. That was on Sunday on NBCSN. The West Ham-Liverpool match was disappointing. It was 676,000 on NBC over the air on Saturday. Meanwhile, the Man City-Arsenal game, 642,000 people watched that one on NBCSN. How about some of the other ones, Kartik? Any other numbers that jump out at you?
I think, kind of poor across the board. I thought that 307 for Toronto Red Bulls was pretty good. That was on ESPN with John Champion calling the match, as we mentioned earlier. But there wasn't a real standout number from the MLS playoffs. 265 for Portland Houston on FS1 was better than the previous FS1 broadcast in this playoffs, but I was disappointed by the 676 for West Ham Liverpool, and Dortmund and Bayern did not clear 200,000, which is also very disappointing. A bad weekend across the board, other than Chelsea United having 782,000, which is a big number for NBCSN. Generally, when you see those kinds of numbers, gaudy numbers for Premier League broadcasts are on over-the-air NBC. But with that exception, it seems like a lot of fans were watching American football all weekend and just tuned in for that one Premier League game in terms of soccer. And that's unfortunate.
Absolutely. Okay, Kartik, let's move on to the listener mailbag. And the first one is from Rob Keith. He sent this in through email. He says, one issue with NBC Sports has been bothering me for a while is their in-match replays. So he says that too often they are cutting away from the live action on the pitch to show a replay from two or sometimes three different angles. During the replays, you can clearly hear the crowd noise rise, and you know something is happening, but they continue to show the replay anyway. If it happened once or twice, that would be one thing, but it seems to happen over and over again every single week. There was one instance in the Chelsea-Man United match where NBC showed a replay three times, and by the time it cut back to the live action, Mkhitaryan was lying on the floor, and we had no idea what had happened. They also have a bad habit of keeping the camera focused on the bench while this match is going on, and the same situation occurs. This adds no value to the match experience and is extremely frustrating to the viewer. Love the show, guys, and keep up the good work. So Kartik, to answer Rob, in terms of the TV feeds, NBC Sports has no control over that. So that's the world feed that goes out. So whether you're in the UK, US, or anywhere in the world, we're all watching the same visuals. So, but it comes down to the producer who's at the stadium, who's going from camera to camera. And that's the thing, too, with the technology these days, and with so many different camera angles, that there is a kind of an overindulgence in perhaps showing too many replays from different angles, especially if it's something controversial. Meanwhile, the match is going on. So it is, I put it down to poor production at times, that they need to kind of know when, keep one eye on the pitch and see what's happening, but also know when to break away from a replay or only show a couple of angles rather than the whole thing. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's overproduction. Honestly, I agree with you completely.
Yeah, plus kind of the focus on the bench too. In a match like this with Mourinho and Conte, there's going to be some cameras on them, and that's something that's, I don't know, to me, it's just focus on the pitch. I think that's really where the action is. So it's, unfortunately, NBC can't control it. So it's not them. It's just they're providing the audio commentary, but not the visual commentary, or the visual effects or match. Next up is Tim, and he sent this in through the comments section on worldsoccertalk.com. He says, I know this is a good thing for ratings short term, and this is talking about last week's podcast where we said Columbus Crew is the best thing that could have happened to MLS in a long time because of TV ratings. But he says it's bad for MLS. I don't think people realize how many people like myself gave MLS a chance, and after finding out that they want to move an original team that started it all and has supported MLS from day one, we are done. This is not just the owner. This is the league for letting it happen as well. I started to be skeptical after Jermaine Jones signed, and then there was a blind draw to put him on a team. Literally, put a team name in a hat and picked out probably. MLS just feels like WWE for soccer fans. You know the athletes are real, but giving real effort. And you know the athletes are real and given real effort, but the end result is contrived and manufactured. What were your thoughts on this one, Kartik? What do you think?
Yeah, the Jermaine Jones thing was embarrassing. And he then went to a team, New England, that was not very good and carried them all the way to the MLS Cup because he came after the World Cup in 2014 and just carried them all the way. So that was WWE for soccer. It was bizarre, and there were just things MLS does. I mean, they go back and forth. At times they try and pretend like they operate like any other league in the world, and obviously without promotion and relegation. And then at other times they look like a very kind of American manufactured entertainment product, not a soccer product at all, not a proper professional league.
Next up is Tom. He also sent this in through the comments section at worldsoccertalk.com. He says, we have been somewhat long-distance fans of the Columbus Crew for more than a decade and went to the 2006 World Cup in Germany with other fans of the team to see the U.S. games. Great group of people and a good time, despite the team's performances there. this contrived move may be just soccer business for MLS, but I'll treat the move as a betrayal of a genuinely spirited fan base who represent a team deserving of better. When the Major League Baseball put business ahead of the World Series in 1994, they lost me as a fan, and MLS will lose me here, too, if they move from Columbus. Now, Kartik, some pretty pointed words there, too. But I think there's a lot of fans that feel that way, whether you're a Columbus fan or not. It feels very NFL in terms of what they're trying to do, and does not feel like a kind of a football soccer spirit in terms of it seems like they're just ripping the soul out of the game by doing this. So hopefully, it doesn't look likely, but hopefully they'll figure out a way to keep Columbus in Columbus. Moving on, Kartik, Scott from McAllen, Texas, sent in an email. He says, what has me watching the Columbus Crew in the playoffs is that the story reminds me of one of my favorite movies, Major League. If I remember correctly, the league wouldn't let the owner move the team unless they finished dead last. What ended up happening was that the team started to come together and win, so the owner started sabotaging the facilities to make them less comfortable. Then there's that Tom Berenger famous line when they found out her plan and they would all be cut by the end of the season and the team relocated to Miami, and he said, we're going to win this whole effing thing. Last but not least, Wolniak through Twitter says, it's easy to say just align the MLS calendar with European calendar. We currently have three teams playing in major NFL stadiums. That is a logistical nightmare. So everyone knows it's hard to get public money from stadiums, for stadiums. It's getting even harder to get land for them. Then there are places that are too cold to play in during the winter. And then there are stadium sharing plans in Canada to consider. Current MLS schedule inflates MLS and their team's valuation of players, making players like Nagbe relatively expensive. It also makes bids for transfer targets relatively more expensive. If you wanted August through May calendar, playoffs overlap with NBA and NHL playoffs and the start of the Major League Baseball season. Currently, MLS playoffs overlap with Major League Baseball playoffs and NFL, NBA, and NHL regular seasons. Pick your poison. The MLS schedule was born out of having to share stadiums with NFL teams. As we move away from stadium sharing, a switch is more likely. So some good feedback there, Kartik. I think in terms of the calendar, there's no perfect solution. I mean, there's always going to be some overlap. There's always going to be some issues. But there is a way. There's a better way than what we currently have. And I think Eric Winalda has a lot of those thoughts in terms of how to fix things.
Yeah, he's talked a lot about this for years, actually. And Wolniak brings up a great point about the schedule was initiated the way it was because it was born out of a need to share stadiums with NFL teams, and that's not there anymore. So we'll see how all this plays out.
Okay, Kartik, let's move on to our featured topic of the week, and that is which foreign clubs have marketed themselves the best in the United States. Conversely, based on our experience, and this is like 12 years of dealing with a lot of these clubs in terms of PR opportunities as well as speaking to a lot of the kind of people within these clubs, which clubs have done the worst jobs based on our experience in dealing with them. So we're gonna name and shame probably a few clubs. I will, at least. Now, Kartik, I'm going to tell you the team name, and you let me know whether you think they're doing a great job or a poor job in terms of marketing themselves in the United States. And this is marketing from a not just a PR perspective, but in terms of working closely with supporters groups, doing a good job at letting people know that, I mean, they're here. And they play in the United States or play friendlies or actually actively involved and interested in building their fan base in the United States. So I'll kick it off, Kartik. I'll ask you the first one, and that's Arsenal.
No, they've done a very poor job in spite of having American ownership for the better part of a decade now. They don't come to this country. There's no real kind of connection or presence. They started with a much larger fan base in this country 15 years ago than most of the other clubs you're going to name on this list, and they have not done a good job. And I think we'll get to their North London rivals in a few minutes, but I think it's in direct contrast to what Spurs have done.
Yeah, I think Arsenal's an example of how not to market a club in the United States in terms of when they have come over for friendlies. It's been kind of one friendly here, one friendly there, whether it's in the MLS All-Star game or if it's in a friendly in New York or New Jersey. And I think the time that they played a few years ago was the first time in about 20 years, or maybe 15 years, that they'd come to the United States. A lot of this is from Arsene Wenger in terms of wanting his clubs to only train in Austria and in Europe. But as we've seen in the past couple of years too, now that they've been playing in, I think, Australia and Asia, there's no excuse at this point. So hopefully they'll start to change things around. And like you said, Kartik, it is a shame because at one point, probably a decade ago, Arsenal would have been probably the number two most supported club, or maybe number three in the United States. Not so much anymore. So moving on, Kartik, next one, Bayern Munich.
Yeah, I think they've done a reasonably good job, given the limitations and exposure for the Bundesliga. They've got a lot of Bayern fans in this country. They have a New York office. Christian Niari, our friend, staffs that office, our colleague in the soccer media world. And they have a real kind of robust connection with their supporters groups throughout the country and do events for them, et cetera.
Yeah, I'd say Bayern Munich, out of all of the clubs in Europe, not all of the clubs, but most of the clubs in Europe, probably do one of the best jobs in terms of marketing themselves in the United States, in terms of just working closely, trying to build that network, especially with the supporters clubs. And they're pretty accessible, too. It's not an ego thing where sometimes we've contacted clubs in the past before, for whether it's for interviews or other opportunities, and usually, sometimes those big clubs, you get no response at all. It's as if you don't even exist. Bayern Munich has definitely been very active in interfacing, not just with the press in the U.S. and doing different press events, but also with the fans. So it's onwards and upwards for them. Speaking of onwards and upwards, what about Tottenham Hotspur?
Yeah, they probably are at the top of this list or near the top of this list. They've done very well, in my estimation, in terms of developing new fans, PR opportunities for U.S. media outlets, including U.S.-based media outlets, including us on several occasions. They come to this country now regularly. And I don't know if there's another team in Europe that's seen its fan base in this country grow as rapidly in the last decade as Spurs. They're a model of what to do if you're not a title-winning club in one of these major European leagues, how to attack the U.S. market. I think it's also helped that as more and more fans watch the Premier League in this country, they want to support a club from London, but they don't want to be seen as front runners. So they don't support Arsenal or Chelsea. They just naturally gravitate to Spurs because Spurs are never going to get relegated. If you support West Ham or Fulham, we had so many Fulham supporters in this country, and now they're busy trying to scrounge to find championship games on television or on ESPN3 now. So Spurs are a safe landing spot for a lot of American fans, and they've taken advantage of that.
Yeah, and you just have to go by just even in the number of Tottenham Hotspur shirts or jerseys you've seen over the past decade. I mean, it's grown. I mean, I see them everywhere now. And there's a lot of it is new fans to soccer. And new fans to the Premier League, and a lot of them are gravitating towards Spurs. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the new White Hart Lane, too, when that's open next year, with that also being an NFL stadium. So it's going to be sharing that ground with an NFL team or having an NFL team play there. So that plays right into, in terms of trying to capture the American mainstream, and they've got a great strategy, and it's working. What about PSG?
Yeah, PSG's done a decent job in the last few years. Obviously, they have the natural connection with beIN Sport and all the investments from Qatar in the United States. I think maybe they could do a better job, but they're limited by their lack of history and by a league that just has very little exposure in the United States. Look, PSG is a relatively new club by European standards, 1970s it was founded. So I think they're doing decently, but they could certainly do much better.
Yeah, for me, PSG's disappointing. It's one of those things, I think at the youth level, they've worked really well. So whether it's PSG academies in certain parts of the United States or outfitting a lot of the youth teams with PSG jerseys, I see more of PSG on that level. From the press and kind of PR side, it's been poor. I know they came to Miami about a year ago or 2 years ago. I got in touch with their PR person and just tried to see if we could do some interviews or attend some of the training sessions, but no response at all. So it seems to be that, it could be different for other publications, but these are just our personal kind of experiences, and PSG's to me is disappointing. It's kind of a company that's more so looking just to send out a press release, and that's kind of their PR involvement, it seems. What about Liverpool, Kartik?
I'm underwhelmed by Liverpool's efforts in this country. They obviously have had American ownership for a decade, better American ownership the last 7 years than the 3 years prior to that. But they haven't done the type of marketing, considering they had such a huge fan base to start with in this country. I think so much of their emphasis has been on going to the Northeast, going to Boston, going to New York. They haven't really touched the rest of the country. There are not many youth clubs associated with Liverpool FC that I see outfitted. I'm seeing fewer and fewer Liverpool kits relative to other European clubs. But then it seems like any match day that you're on Twitter, there are more Liverpool fans vocal than just about any other supporters base. Yeah. But I have to say, when we look at the television ratings from NBC, Liverpool doesn't have the same cachet now as the other big teams.
Right, not like they used to. I mean, the one thing I would say about Liverpool is that they've done an excellent job of coming over to the States for a long time. I mean, it's like every couple of years, like clockwork, pretty much. They're coming over to play friendlies, and not just friendlies, like one friendly here or one friendly there, like Arsenal. They're doing major North American tours and oftentimes playing in Canada too. So they're definitely kind of working it hard. It's a challenge for them, but they could be doing better, I agree. Kartik, what about your team, Manchester City?
Yeah, obviously Manchester City may be the model. Of course, it helps when you win titles and you do the sorts of things that they've done on the pitch. They've invested in an MLS team. They own an MLS team. And, of course, despite the claims when they bought that team that it would have its own identity, it doesn't, right? It's an extension of Manchester City. The kits look exactly the same, other than being Adidas rather than Nike, because MLS is you're required to have Adidas. Every team has an Adidas kit. They come over to the States regularly. They interact with fans in the United States often through the supporters groups and citizens. They even reached out to me when I was trying to start a Manchester City supporters group here in Florida many, many, many years ago. This is before the takeover. Sorry. It was right after the takeover I stand corrected. It was before the Abu Dhabi takeover, but when Shinawatra was the owner. So it was post – it was that 1 year in between. Very, very aggressive. Very aggressive in terms of promoting items for the USA, even in their shop and getting a merchandise over to the American consumer, American City fans. So they've done a very, very good job of that.
The other thing about Manchester City too, just like PSG, they've done an excellent job at the youth level, so youth soccer level. Again, I'm seeing tons and tons of teams that are just wearing Manchester City kits. And actually, the same thing for Bayern Munich. I've seen that too in terms of their association with some clubs. And it makes a lot of sense because you have a minimum of like 11 players on the pitch, usually a squad of 15. If you kind of do that through the entire club, you've got maybe perhaps potential, whether teens or younger children that could turn into Manchester City fans later on, or at least it increases the awareness. And it also, it's impressive. It's impressive in that I'm like, wow, look at all these Manchester City shirts. And then I realize it's actually the youth soccer team kind of going around and getting ready for the next match.
couple quick stories on this front. So a few weeks ago, we had a Boca Raton FC game on a field at Cypress Park in Coral Springs. The very next field, there was a game going on, a youth game between a team wearing Byron kits and a team wearing Manchester City kits. So that's story number one. Story number two is actually Manchester City reached out to me when they started to outfit one of the youth teams here in South Florida and sent Mike Summerbee over. Brand ambassador, obviously one of the greatest players in club history. And I got to spend some time with Mike Summerbee, and they had, and it turned out they weren't just outfitting a team, they were outfitting an entire league in Miami. So every team in that league is wearing Manchester City kits. So that's part of the aggressive marketing. I have to say on the PSG front, they do this quite well also. We have a local team in PDL, the fourth division here in the United States, where they wear PSG kits, FC Miami City, and they have a sponsorship with BeIN Sports, which is obviously based locally, and they wear PSG kits.
So speaking of kits and speaking of aggressive, I think Manchester United has done a pretty good job in the States in terms of marketing themselves. It's almost like a its own engine in many ways in terms of the marketing campaigns, coming over again every couple of years to play matches throughout the United States. In terms of their attendances at the games, it's almost always a sellout or pretty close to it. There's just legions of Manchester United supporters throughout the United States. Always has been, but I've seen growth. I've seen a lot of people becoming Man United fans. I see a lot of shirts around. I don't think they're making too many mistakes. What do you think, Kartik?
Yeah, I think it's a tough one to judge because it's that much easier to market Manchester United in this country than probably any other side outside of Real Madrid. So I'd say they're doing pretty well, but they don't have to do a lot. They don't have to do what everybody else does.
So what about these three German clubs? I'm going to pull them all together, but Bayer Leverkusen, Schalke, and then Borussia Dortmund. What's your thoughts on these in terms of their marketing in the U.S.?
Well, Leverkusen has had probably more standout American players probably than any other European club that I can think of. Maybe Fulham would be the other team that's in that that conversation historically. So that's a little bit of a difficult one to assess because I think so many of those American players were there in an era before these games were readily available. So they did not do the job maybe that they could have done to capture that kind of supporter space the way Fulham did. Fulham captured a lot of hardcore American soccer fans decided if they were going to support a European club, it was Fulham because of the number of Americans there. Leverkusen has had maybe not the concentration of Americans at one time, but historically probably as many, if not more, Americans than Fulham. But the last few winter breaks, they've come over to the United States and tried to market themselves in Florida, so I think they've improved. Schalke, I'm not sure how well Schalke has marketed itself. Schalke is a club I liken to being like the Spurs of Germany, a club that's a hard luck club, working class supporters base, has finished second in the league a number of times since the Bundesliga went fully professional, but has not won the league. A club with a massive supporters base, more members than I think any club outside of Borussia Dortmund and Bayern, which are clearly the two biggest clubs in the country. They haven't marketed themselves as well here as they should. I would like to see them do better because I think it's a fantastic club. It's a great club to kind of bond with. If you're a newer football fan, I have a little bit of a closeted myself support for Schalke. Not fully closeted. I mean, the thing with supporting Bundesliga clubs, though, for me has been by default I've become a Borussia Dortmund fan just because I want to see Bayern not win every year. But so my allegiances aren't very strong. But prior to that, this era of a duopoly atop of the Bundesliga, I quite fancied Schalke, and I don't think they've done a good enough job, honestly. On to Borussia Dortmund. Borussia Dortmund has, I think, had a couple things working for it. Obviously, most recently, Christian Pulisic. Prior to that, I would say their deal with Puma has gotten them featured in a lot of soccer stores and merchandise stores, whereas if they were a Nike or Adidas brand, they'd be further down the pecking order for those manufacturers. Adidas is very aggressive about promoting previously Chelsea, now Bayern Munich in Germany. Nike, very, very aggressive about promoting Barcelona,
Manchester City, and now I would say Chelsea as well. But Dortmund has been that other kind of top Puma brand in this country. Now Arsenal's Puma, so they fall into second. But Borussia Dortmund kits have shown up in a lot of places, and I think the colors is also very attractive. This is part of the attraction of Columbus Crew in the past. Dortmund also was able to get for many years BBB television on American channels, and it's been Fubo more recently. So I'd say they've done a pretty good job. They have clearly established themselves as a club that American fans are interested in. And again, I think part of it is the anti-Bayern thing, the desire to see someone in that league win other than Bayern. And then the personalities of Jurgen Klopp and Thomas Tuchel. Here's something that's pretty significant about Borussia Dortmund versus other German clubs. They have their last three managers have all been comfortable speaking on camera in English, which is not the case, even though most Germans know English and many Germans can speak, converse in English. They're not comfortable on camera in English. And Klopp, Tuchel, and now Peter Bosch. Peter Bosch is obviously Dutch, and most Dutch people are comfortable in English. But for German managers who had never worked outside of Germany, Klopp and Tuchel were incredibly fluent in English and incredibly comfortable with doing interviews in English. To the point where you do you watch the Bundesliga review show, which is dubbed into English. Most of the interviews are dubbed into English, and then Klopp gives his interview and then Klopp gets replaced by Tuchel. Tuchel gives his interview. They just give it in English. It's no translation, no dubbing. And I think that has had a big impact on Borussia Dortmund's favorability in the U.S. That they and I think it's a club policy. The club has gone out of its way to have people do interviews in English so that they can penetrate, I guess, the global market, including Asia, but the U.S. in particular probably.
Right. Yeah, my biggest complaint about these German teams, and actually I'll include Bayern Munich in this too, of course, is that they don't come here that often. It's pretty rare that you get Borussia Dortmund or Bayern Munich playing matches throughout the United States. They may play select games here and there. But, where are these teams? I mean, obviously, some of them have come over in winter breaks before. But this winter, Kartik, there's not one German club coming over for the Florida Cup. There is rumors, there are rumors that Borussia Dortmund will play Bayern Munich in a friendly in Chicago next summer, which would be huge. And but Borussia Dortmund and Bayern Munich have been spending Borussia Dortmund more so have been spending a lot of time in Asia, very very little time in the United States.
I think part of it is a byproduct of the German Cup and that first round of games being before the season begins. That's I think a contributing factor. You have an actual competitive match for all of these teams a weekend before you do for other European leagues. Well, actually, in the case of Spain, maybe two or three weekends before they actually kick off. So that's a part of it, unfortunately.
Yeah, but even in the winter break, though, I mean, usually they go to what, Doha or the Middle East. I mean,
Turkey.
Right, there's an opportunity there for them to come over and do some friendly matches for whatever reason. I don't know if it's cultural or just in terms of tradition. Maybe it's tradition more so than anything. But they're not coming over as much as they should be. And there's other obviously there's other Bundesliga clubs too, Mönchengladbach that could be attractive to the U.S. markets. But they're not coming here. It seems strange in terms of especially when we're talking about all these other clubs in terms of Man City and Liverpool and PSG and how often these clubs come over to play games in the United States. And that's a large part of the marketing campaign is having a presence, having fans be able to watch these matches. It makes a huge difference. Okay, Kartik, so where can listeners find you on the internet?
Just real quickly before we go to that, I think you're absolutely right because David Moyes, when he was the manager of Everton, brought Everton over a single, I think of his 11 seasons, brought him to the U.S. 10 times. There are a disproportionate number of Everton fans in the United States. Now, obviously, they've had some American players, but a disproportionate number of Everton fans in the United States compared to their global following. So that does – Everton's a test case. That does have an impact. And the reason they came here is just because Moyes liked to train in the U.S. Yeah. The way other managers like to train in Central Europe or in Asia, he just liked the facilities here and would come here. So that has an impact. Anyway, you can find me on the internet at KKFLA737 on Twitter and various places, including worldsoccertalk.com, with my writing.
Okay, well, we apologize for some of the technical difficulties we had in this show. So it's definitely a hiccup with Skype today. So hopefully things will be better for the next show. But thanks for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audio Boom, and worldsoccertalk.com. And Kartik, what should they do?
Enjoy your football.